Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lawson.
At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Three-step drop. Oh, he is buried. He is sacked. It is Mario Williams back at midfield.
You got to give me that leg, Will. You got to give me that leg, Will.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Throws it downfield. Intercepted. Picked off by Jarris Bird. The ball hawk with the interception for the Bill.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. Tonight on the show, we'll talk about the University at Buffalo's Pro Day. Doug Majewski, the Bills coordinator of college scouting, in studio with us. He ran the Pro Day today. At 8 o'clock, Brad Schultz, the author of the book, The NFL Year One. And at 8:30, we'll hear from UB star Khalil Mack and Bulls coach Jeff Quinn.
This is pandemonium!
CJ at the 10, 5, touchdown! CJ Spiller, touchdown Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Doug Majewski, he did not run in the Pro Day. Let's be clear about that. He ran the Pro Day. He administered it. The Bills Director of College Scouting, Doug Majewski, with us tonight at 7:30. Good evening. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We are live tonight, live radio back on the air. First time since last Thursday. A little bit of water over the dam, or water under the dam, as Bruce Smith would say, since the last time we talked last Thursday. Happy to have you with us here tonight. You heard the rundown. Doug Majewski at 7:30. We'll talk about what goes into a pro day, what went into today's pro day for the UB Bulls, and what a real-life professional scout looks at when they look at a pro day. At 8 o'clock, author Brad Schultz, who is a journalism teacher at the University of Mississippi, he's going to join us at 8 to talk about his book, The NFL Year One. It's about the 1970 NFL season, the first season of completely merged AFL-NFL. We'll talk with Brad Schultz about that at 8 o'clock. And at 8:30, we'll hear from Khalil Mack, the man of the hour. He dominated all the coverage of UB's Pro Day today. I mean, people to talk about him as a top five pick. I mean, Mike Mayock said he was the number one overall pick a couple of weeks ago at the Combine. UB linebacker Khalil Mack, we'll hear from him. We'll hear from his coach. We talked with his coach. We sat down with his coach, Jeff Quinn, today after the Pro Day. Big day for UB. All 32 teams in the Bills Fieldhouse, the Healthy Zone Fieldhouse right next door. And we'll talk with Coach Jeff Quinn about that, what it means for the University at Buffalo program. And, of course, we want to hear from you. We want to hear from you tonight about anything you'd like regarding the Buffalo Bills or the NFL. The phone lines are open. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll-free if you're outside the 716. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. You can always reach us and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Obviously, on the front of everybody's mind, Jarris Bird and the decision yesterday by the Bills not to place the franchise tag on veteran safety Jarris Bird. I have to say, I was surprised. I guess I got an inkling over the weekend that that's the way it was going to go, and thought about it all weekend and came around to the realization, I think, of what the where the Bills are going with this. And it makes some sense. Obviously, in the perfect world, Jarris Bird would sign a contract and stay here and continue to play and go to more Pro Bowls for the Buffalo Bills. And I think we all wish that could be the way. But I think the Bills have made a calculated decision here in an effort to, do the best for the team that they can. And you probably heard what Doug Whaley had to say about it yesterday. If you didn't, you can hear Doug Whaley's comments in their entirety on an 8-minute radio interview we did with him yesterday. You can go to BuffaloBills.com for that, or a video piece, Doug Whaley, on his comments yesterday. But let's hear from you. I want to hear your comments, your thoughts, your disappointment about the fact that they did not tag Jarris Bird with a franchise tag. Only four players got the franchise tag in the NFL this year. Just four. Not very popular tagging. One of them was a kicker, Nick Folk of the Jets. What do you think? Are you disappointed? Do you think it's the right move, the wrong move? Are you livid? Give us a call. This is the place to vent if you feel that way. 803-0550 is the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I was surprised. When we last met here and were able to interact on Thursday, I thought it was almost a slam dunk that they would tag him and continue to negotiate. We talked about tagging and talking, tagging and trading, and then over the weekend had a chance to think about it and think about it from the front office perspective here for a minute. The tag up to $8.4 million this year. It's a lot for 1 year for a safety. I mean, it's just a lot of money. The tag over 2 years, if they tagged him and couldn't find a trade partner, the Bills would have been on the hook They still may be on the hook for this, too, somewhere near this, but would have been on the hook for $15 million plus over 2 years for Jarris Bird with no long-term commitment, essentially renting the player two straight rental years for $15 million total over 2 years. That's a lot of money for a safety. That is way over what the safety market is, I think. And from the Bills' perspective, they're thinking, you know, do we really want to pay that much to rent a player for 2 years? They made what Doug Whaley described as a significant offer in a long-term deal for Jarris Bird, an offer that some reports had, $30 million in the first 3 years. We don't know how much of that is guaranteed. I don't think it was all guaranteed, but $30 million over the first 3 years is really well over what the market is. I mean, the market, as you know, is $8.4 million for a safety. That's the average of 5 years. Is there a chance he'll return? Yeah, I guess there's a chance. He's going to get a look now at what the market will bear. And, if he doesn't like it or if he likes the situation here better, if the money is close, maybe Jarris Bird comes back. I think the one thing that's become clear to me, and even more so today, watching Jarris Bird on ESPN, we'll hear some of his comments on ESPN. He really wants to see what his worth is. He really wants a chance to go out and see what his worth is. The Bills went through kind of a painful experience with Jarris Bird last year when they tagged him and he didn't show up until the very end of training camp and then wasn't able to play because of the injury the first 6 weeks. And that was not, you know, was not a good situation. I think they figured the tag would create acrimony and set up that kind of situation again moving forward this year. Jarris Bird, I think, really wants to get a look at what his value is around the league, and he'll get a chance now. And the way it works, just so you know, starting this Saturday, any team that is interested in Jarris Bird can begin to contact him above board. They can do that starting Saturday, and he cannot sign until next Tuesday, a week from today, March 11th. Do I think someone's going to blow him out of the water? Yeah, probably. Somebody's going to want him and think that he solves their problems on defense. Maybe somebody closer to, you know, Super Bowl contention than the Bills might be right now. Tough to see good players get away if he does get away. Very tough. I know it's very disappointing. It's disappointing to me. I think it's disappointing for the Bills. But they've taken a look at where they are, what they want to pay a safety, what their salary structure is. They've taken a look at what they want to do in free agency this year. They've taken a look at who's coming up, who's coming due, you know, other young players that they want to keep around. Jarris Bird, 27 years old. He'll turn 28 years old in October this year. This clearly is his last contract. And from his perspective, you can see why he'd want to get a sense of what the market will bear. That's what he'll get a chance to do later this week, starting Saturday, and a chance to sign to someone next Tuesday. Give us your thoughts on it. Do you like it? Do you not like it? The phone lines are open. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Really, what's to like? Like I said, it's not good to have good players walk out the door. There's no question about that. Got a couple of tweets already. Nick says, Bird doesn't want to be in Buffalo. Let him go. He's good. He makes plays, but he's not Palomalo. Use the money elsewhere. Tyler Traub tweets in. That's hard to say. If Bird walks, we still have decent safeties in Searcy and Aaron Williams, but it would sure be nice to get a deal done with 31. I agree. It'd be great to get a deal done. And as Doug Whaley pointed out yesterday, they can continue to dialogue. They can continue to talk. Charlie Oswald tweets in, wish Bird would have signed, but he's not the only player they're going to have to worry about in the near future. Mike Stock tweets in, I'd love to have him back, but I think he's looking for huge money. I'm sure the Bills have a limit for a safety. I think that's what they're up against. Matthew tweets in, unfortunately, sound like he's gone. Bills did their best to sign him, but constant losing hurt. No question. And Tom O'Sullivan tweets in, Bills are dumb. Bird is greedy. Fans in Buffalo deserve players that want to be here. I can't argue with the fans' perspective on that one. I mean, they do deserve players that want to be here. You want players who want to be here. What do you think? You can tweet in your comments. We can talk about it on the phone, too. That way we can have a little dialogue. The phone lines are open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And we'll start with Rob and Clarence. Good evening, Rob. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing? Love your show. Just want to appreciate you.
Thank you.
My theory is why didn't they tag him and then trade him? At least now they would have had something for him. Now they're going to get nothing.
Yeah, and that was asked. I asked it on the radio interview we did. It was asked of Doug Whaley a couple of times. He referred to, and I'll tell you what he said, moving parts, a lot of moving parts involved, which means in his perspective, from Doug Whaley's perspective, you got to find a trade partner. You got to find a trade partner who's willing to, at first, take the big bite, the $8.4 million bite on the franchise tag. And then you got that trade partner, obviously, is going to want to renegotiate. So that trade partner has to almost kind of get the works going, you know, to negotiate a more livable contract for the team. I mean, nobody wants to eat $8.4 million. It might not be that easy to trade Jarris Bird with that number on him. It might not be that easy, quite frankly, Rob.
I would think they should have gave it a shot. At least that way you would have had him for another year.
Yeah, at a difficult number, at a high number. And believe me, I'm sure that's what the calculation was. I have a pretty good sense that there was a lot of thought that went into this, and they went right down to the wire yesterday before deciding not to tag him. So to me, that indicates that they put a lot of thought into it, thought about tagging and trading, thought about tagging him and keeping him at that number. And, you know, I have a feeling if the Bills were a bona fide Super Bowl contender this next year, you would make a move like that. You would bite the bullet and pay him $8.4 million for 1 year and know that you paid him $15 million over 2 years and you have no claim on him after the season is over. I think you would do that if you were a Super Bowl contender and you felt like you needed him to put you over the top, keep you over the top. Not many safeties are in that position. And, in fact, I go back to our conversation with Bill Polian at the Combine when he said, if you believe, and I'm paraphrasing here, but if you believe that the player is essential to your program, to what you're doing defensively, then, yeah, tag him and pay him at that number and keep him. And then Polian went on to say, I don't believe Bird is that player. So that's just one opinion. Brian at Cheektowaga. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
How you doing, John?
Okay.
I would like to know, maybe you have some inside information on this. Why wouldn't they have opted to use the, and I may be terming this wrong, but what do they call it, the non-exclusive transition tag,
yeah,
where basically if somebody else signs him, then they get draft picks. I believe it's 2 first-round draft picks, which I'd be perfectly happy. I mean, why didn't they opt to do that, do you think?
Well, I mean, you might be talking about two different things. There's a non-exclusive franchise tender and an exclusive franchise tender. There were no exclusive franchise players this year. There were non-exclusive for them. And you're talking about also, maybe you're talking about the transition player. And that player, I'm reading the rule right here, that player will be permitted to negotiate a contract with any club subject to his prior club's right of first refusal, except that no draft choice compensation shall be made with respect to such player if the prior club declines to exercise its right of first refusal. So I don't know if you mean transition. I think you mean non-exclusive franchise tag. And
well,
that is...
I mean, as I understood it, I was perusing the websites yesterday, and what I read was that if another team tenders him an offer, they have the right to match it, which I think is what you just said.
That's the transition tag.
And if they choose not to match it, and the other team, and they let him go, the other team has to give them draft pick compensation, which, according to what I read, was 2 first-round draft picks, which, as far as I'm concerned, if that's the case, now, maybe I'm mistaken, but if that's the case,
no,
why
yeah,
wouldn't they have exercised that option?
No, you're a little confused here. What you're talking about is non-exclusive franchise tag, which is what
right,
the 4 franchise players were tagged with and what they elected not to use on Jarris Bird, but they don't have right of first refusal. Under the transition tag, they have right of first refusal, but no draft choice compensation. So there's really no benefit to transition tag other than right of first refusal.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sorry to see him.
Yeah, I know.
Hopefully, maybe they can work it out in the next few days. But
yeah, we'll see.
The other thing that I wanted to say, because they have many millions of dollars underneath the cap.
$19 million, $20 million.
To me, you know, an extra million a year here or there, they have the money to get this done. I just don't see why they wouldn't want to keep a guy that is arguably one of their best defensive players.
Yeah. Well, they do want to, but let me see if I can explain this. Under the new CBA, they're going to be at, I believe, 95% of the cap. The cap's going to be, what, $133 million? Every team is required to be at 95% of near the cap in terms of spending. So that money's going to be spent. I think from the Bills' perspective, it's allocation of resources. Do you want to spend that much money, $8.4 million, on one player? Do you want to maybe rework a deal with Marcell Dareus? Do you want to take a look at C.J. Spiller? Do you have some other free agents you might want to bring in? So the money's going to be spent, and they got to spend, all teams have to spend up to, like, I believe it's 95% of the cap. So it's not like that money's not going to be spent. Let's go to Don in Buffalo. Hi, Don. Welcome. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's really disappointing what happened with Bird. You know, I know the Bills have gotten deals done with Stevie, Kyle Williams, Eric Wood. I consider those guys, you know, like good players. They're good players. You know, Bird is at that, in my opinion, elite level status. And it's just disappointing that we can't retain him. I mean, he is at the caliber of a top safety in the league, and he's he's gonna leave. I mean, he's gone, you know. And it's really disappointing as a Bills fan. But can you really blame him that much, given, you know, going on 15 years no playoffs and third D coordinator in 3 years, 6-10 year last year. You know, it's just more turnover. And can you blame him for wanting to look elsewhere? You really can't. And I'm really watching the Darius situation, because I think he's now going to be entering, after last year, elite-level status. And if they can't get that deal done, I'm just losing some hope. But, you know, hopefully they can retain him, and that will make things a little brighter.
No, I get it. I hear what you're saying. I think, obviously, the losing and the turmoil, the churn of coaches has to weigh on Jarris Bird. I do think it's mostly about money with him. And, you know, at age 27, going to be 28 in October, this is going to be his last chance at a big contract in the NFL, and that means something. You know, people talk a lot about his dad. His dad was a really good corner in the league. Gil Bird played defensive back and now is a coach. And probably one of the pieces of advice, among the many good pieces of advice he got from his dad probably also counseled him that get the money. Take the money. Your career's going to be short. And, you know, from a player's perspective, that's very important. The money is important to these guys. Testing their value is a right that they've collectively bargained for. And it was painful back in the early 90s when free agency came in. It's the system that we have now. It seems to work. It doesn't mean that you can always keep your good players. And that's what the Bills and their fans are up against tonight. Dave in Orchard Park. Hi, Dave. Welcome. You're on the air.
John, thanks for taking my call. Great work, as always.
Thank you.
I'm not even going to touch on the Sabres because this is a football show, but the whole thing over the weekend that happened, coupling with what Jarris Bird said today on SportsCenter, I don't know if you caught what he said. But
yeah, we got some sound bites from that we want to play in a minute here, yeah.
Yeah, but from his comment regarding, I think it was, he was asked about which fan base was one of the best or which one he thought was comparable to us, and he said New Orleans. As far as I'm concerned, the perception of Buffalo can't get much worse. We look like I don't even know how to explain how I feel we look. But the city of Buffalo has definitely taken one on the chin. Is there any comment you can make or any positive spin you could see resulting from any of this Bird situation or anything with Buffalo to make us look or anything to make it look like we're turning a corner or not negatively?
I don't know. I'll be honest with you, Dave. I try not to get hung up on that the perception of Buffalo, because I'm comfortable here. I love it here. Most people who live here love it.
Me too, John. And it really, it's really disheartening, though, when you go on the radio at night and you hear national writers and reporters just lambasting the city in the front office.
Well, who does that? Who have you heard do that? I haven't caught a lot of that.
There was a reporter on CBS Sports last night. He was comparing Buffalo to Cleveland. He was talking about Mike Pettin and how Mike Pettin was like a nobody based on his track record in terms of coaching. I kind of turned it off at that point, but it made us as Buffalo just sound terrible. And it's kind of getting to a point, as far as I'm concerned, where I'm almost ashamed to say that I'm a Buffalo sports fan. Yeah. And in the 22 years that I've grown up here, I've never been able to say that. And I don't know how to be positive about any of this situation,
all right,
either with the hockey team or with Bird.
Two things, Dave. Hide all the sharp objects at home, number one. I don't want to make light of it, but I don't think it's a Buffalo thing. It's the NFL. It's the way the system works. These players, 20 years ago, collectively bargained for the right and actually, you know, be under the threat of litigation, got the right to move around, to have free agency. That's what we're up against. That's what the cap's all about. That's all it is. It's, I mean, not to sound like the Godfather here, but it's really nothing personal. It's business. It's not an anti-Buffalo thing. It's business. It's Jarris Bird wanting to see what exactly is his value at age 27 with a career, career of 4, maybe 5 years in the NFL. Can you blame him for wanting to take a look around and see what the money is and maximizing his earning potential? I think that's what it is. It's business. It's nothing personal. That's what Tom Hagen said to the movie guy, right? Let's go to Chris in Buffalo. Chris, welcome. You're on the show. Chris, why can't I punch you up here? There you are. Chris, how are you?
Yes, good. Thanks for having me. I just had a few questions. I wanted to know if you think the Bills should be offering these guys contracts like inside of their rookie deals, you know, like before their contracts expire.
No.
You know, like, say, Andy LaVitra and Jarris Bird.
Well,
they should have been offered a contract a long time ago.
Well, they do. I mean, when they got a guy who they want to keep around, they beat him to the punch. Don't let him hit free agency. Eric Wood is in that boat. Kyle Williams is in that boat. They do that.
I understand.
Yeah, they do that. The one thing
I just wasn't sure if it was Andy LaVitra or Bird were offered contracts. I was not sure.
I don't know. I mean, Bird was offered a contract, not one that he accepted, obviously. He offered one quite recently, as a matter of fact, before he hit free agency.
I understand.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ideal, to get him locked up when you can. You also want to, I think, take advantage of the fact that when they're in their rookie contract, you're getting a bargain. You know what the greatest bargain in professional sports is right now? Russell Wilson on his rookie contract with Seattle with a deep playoff appearance and a Super Bowl ring on his finger. You know what a bargain that is for Seattle? You know how much that helps them sign other players? I mean, that's the ideal when you have a player who performs right out of the box and you can pay him under his rookie contract. Let's go to Scott in Cheektowaga. Hi, Scott. Welcome. You're on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm not sharing the same negative sentiment that a lot of the other folks are with either team, but Buffalo Bills specifically. I don't usually listen to evening talk radio because it's a car thing for me, and I'm usually home for the night by then. So I don't often hear your show, and I've got to say, I had a reason to be in the car tonight, and I enjoy a rational conversation. You broke down Whaley's rationale from your perspective on why he's not been tagged, and I appreciated that. I like that it's. I'm okay with him not being tagged, and your reasoning for it or his, and your explaining it to us, it makes sense. I'm very positive, and I think that he has enough of a track record that we should sit back and trust his decision making. There's 21 other starters on this team that they have to be responsibly spending for, so I'm okay with it. They've got guys that are lesser quality historically that will step in and replace him, but who's to say that they aren't going to be the same or better if given a chance to play all year long? I'm all right with it. I'm curious as to what you hear from the inside of any names, guys that are on other teams that may be on ours next year, or collegiate players that are out there that, you're in the know. We're not necessarily. Who do you hear would be good fits?
Okay.
I'm curious, and if you guys could leave me on, because as I said, I'm home, so I don't have a radio. I'd like to hear what you say.
All right. Well, Scott, believe me, this is not a good thing, not tagging Jarris, the fact that he's going to be out there testing the market as of Saturday this week. I'm not going to try to paint a rosy picture on that. It's not good. You want to keep good players like Jarris Burt. But I guess what we're trying to do here tonight is present what the Bills decision makers say as the reasons they didn't use the tag. And by the way, they still plan on negotiating through the week. And if they get a chance, after he is free to sign next Tuesday, but this is, it's not a good thing. In a perfect fan world, you could keep these guys as long as you want. I mean, that's the way it was before free agency. I don't know where they're going in free agency. I have a sense they're going to want to look at some linebackers, quite frankly, some veteran linebackers who are out on the street. I think they have made the decision that they'd really like to move Kiko Alonso to the outside. So I think in free agency they're going to be in the market for some veteran inside linebacker types at the right price. DeQuell Jackson, formerly of the Browns, is making the rounds around the NFL these days. As far as we know, not scheduled to visit here yet, mostly because he's going to get a lot of money, or at least going to ask for a lot of money. I think they're looking for a bargain-type signing to play middle linebacker, similar to what Manny Lawson did at the outside spot last year. I think they'd like to find a Manny Lawson type of bargain for the inside middle linebacker spot so they can kick Kiko outside. That's just my sense about where they're going. Hey, before we go much further, as the earlier caller mentioned, Jarris Burt made the rounds in Bristol, Connecticut today, obviously orchestrated by his agent to basically put up a big billboard by the side of the road and say, I'm ready, I'm open for business. And Jarris Burt appeared on various ESPN shows today. He was on the Morning Sports Center show with Hannah Storm asking the questions. And Jarris Burt said, was asked for his reaction to the fact that he was not tagged with the franchise tag yesterday.
Well, I'm just taking it in stride. I know, I understand that it's a business, and now I'm just ready for the next phase of that.
Okay. Your GM, Doug Whaley, said, as they say in the movie, there's always a chance. What do you think your future is in Buffalo?
I don't know. But at this point, I'm definitely keeping all my options open. see whatever happens in free agency. And, you know, the lines of communication are open with them as well. So no door is shut.
Well, the free agency officially begins a week from today. You have an opportunity to become one of the top defensive backs available. What do you envision that process is going to be like? And what will you be looking for?
It'll be fun and exciting. I think it's something new. So it's kind of the unknown, but I'm looking forward to it. And I don't really know what it'll be like, but hopefully it'll be a good experience.
That's Jairus Byrd this morning on ESPN Sports Center with Hannah Storm. And the last answer, there's clear that he wants to hit the market. He wants to see what his value is. Looking forward to it. Going to be kind of the unknown, something new. Hopefully it'll be a good experience. We'll see. He's probably going to wind up on somebody else's roster the way the NFL goes, but we'll see how it works out. We're going to get back to more phone calls. I know people want to talk about Jairus Byrd, but coming up next, we're going to be talking. So if you're on the line, by the way, stay there. Coming up next, Doug Majewski, who's the Buffalo Bills coordinator of college scouting and national scout. He was the guy in charge of today's pro day. I've never been to a pro day. Today was the first day I ever went to a bona fide pro day. The UB Bulls were in the Healthy Zone Fieldhouse next door here at Ralph Wilson Stadium. So Doug Majewski was running the show. We're going to get from him a scout's eye view of what goes on at the pro day. What are they looking for? How do they look at these prospects? That's coming up next. Doug Majewski, the Bills. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back. The field house was full today here at One Bills Drive as University at Buffalo held its pro day with scouts from all over, media, UB folks. Joining us in studio, the Buffalo Bills coordinator of college scouting and national scout, 24 years with the Bills, Doug Majewski. I guess that makes you a lifer.
Can we change that to 12?
24 years with the Bills. Hey, today you were the coordinator of UB's pro day in the field house. How did you get assigned that duty?
It was a combination of the fact that I'm an alumni and I deal with the coaches quite a bit, and the fact that they're using our facility to have their pro day was just to, you know, just keeping information about who's coming, what they need, what we had for them. So I kind of got stuck with just the details of it.
Typically, like if you go to a college, on-site at a college, who runs the pro day? Who does what you do?
Usually, it's a combination of scouts from other teams that, you know, we know what we have to get done. We have to, you know, get the combine drills done before the positional workout. So we just take the bull by the horns and you know, we assign guys, hey, you get the height, you get the weight, you do the measurements, blah, 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 and just to get through the process so we can get it wrapped up and completed.
Doug, it appeared today there were scouts from every team, right? 32 yeah, teams represented. Much, yep. And are they all regional scouts, area scouts for the most part?
It's a combination. You know, there was a combination of area scouts, regional scouts. There's coaches, national scouts. There's a few GMs here. So, yeah. You know.
Well, we saw a GM, Reggie McKenzie. Mm-hmm. We saw a head coach, Mike Patton. How rare is that for the top-level guys to be at a pro day?
It's not rare at all. I mean, that's pretty much, you know, standard for the top-flight guys. You'll see, you know, head coaches, you'll see GMs there.
Talk about the drills that they went through. Are those standard drills? Like if you go to Auburn Pro Day later today, will they do pretty much the same drills?
Everything from, you know, the height weights in the morning to the measurements to vertical, broad jump, 40, short shuttle, 3-cone, and 60 shuttle are pretty much standardized every Pro Day. That's going to happen. Now, if a player's completed everything at the combine as Mac has done, then if he wants to run another 40, that was up to him. But as long as he's done everything at the combine, that's pretty much for the other kids who didn't attend the combine.
When it comes to measurements, height, weight, that wouldn't change combine.
No, but we would always get a weight on a player the day he's working out. Like before Mac worked out, we made sure we got a weight on him, so we just know that, you know, he's whatever his weight was today compared to what he ran.
Is it bench press work too?
Yeah, bench press was right after height and weights. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you looking for? What is a scout looking for in a pro day like today?
You know, it's funny. The kids think it's all about numbers. And, yeah, the numbers are important. We, you know, we want to get as much of the data to compare them, you know, to the players across the country. But a lot of it is how they work, how they pick things up, you know, their attitude, you know, how they handle things and things like that. And it's a combination of things, but the players think it's all about running the 40. And it's really not. It's about, you know, how a kid competed today.
It's probably the focus on the 40 because that's one of the most measurable things, and we're all familiar with just a dead sprint, right? Yeah. Three-cone drill, stuff like that is sort of esoteric, but everybody, when you're a little kid, you run fast. That's what you do.
That's right. If you can run, you can run.
Yeah. Let's talk about Khalil Mack a little bit. 4.63 timed at the combine, about 4.5 to 4.58 today. Yeah. So yeah. Pretty good improvement for him, and it sounded like that was important for him to run better.
You know, he wanted to run better. He ran at Indy between 4.59 and 4.63. So, I mean, there was a little bit of range there. And then he did a little bit better today. And, but when you watch tape, you know he can run on film too. So this is just like, you know, dotting the I and crossing the T.
He mentioned to the media after today's pro day workout that he actually went to work since the combine the last couple of weeks at Pepsi Center working on his speed.
Yes. Most of your top players all spend time working on these drills and what to prepare for at their pro days or at the combine.
I asked you what the scouts look at, but what are they? They're all there timing, like Khalil Mack and the rest of them in the 40 times, and they all have different times. Then everybody's got a different watch.
Yes, you know, it's like if I was timing the 40 today, I would have stayed with my time. But then we get together because I mean, there's guys timing the 10, the 20. There's coaches that aren't timing. We get together and we share information, and we'll get a couple guys to read. All right, here was my 40 time. You know, here was a scout from Tampa Bay, or here was a scout from the Washington Redskins. So we get a combination, you know, and that way you can see if there's an outlier or one that doesn't make sense. But pretty much you just get a range of what other people had.
And that's not considered proprietary information?
No. I mean, we're all working together. I mean, like, you know, all the scouts get in here and they to get the things done and get the things completed, they work together. So it's just a sharing of information.
We're talking with Doug Majewski. He's the Bills coordinator of college scouting, national scout, and he coordinated today's UB Pro Day today. Some teams administer tests. I know some of the UB players actually went in a meeting room where the teams gave them a test today.
A couple of the kids that hadn't never taken the Wonderlic test, we administered that. And then there's some special psychological tests that certain teams do that they needed a meeting room to sit down and give them the test.
What goes on now? I was trying to think what's next for a guy like Khalil Mack. He obviously will make some visits to teams around the league, and those are not workouts, right? Those are just
correct. Every team can have up to 30 individual visits where they'll come to the facility, and you don't put them through drills, you don't run them, but you basically sit down with them, and it's more of a mental thing as far as getting them on the board, seeing what they know, watching tape with them, and just getting a feel for a player that way. But he also will probably have some individual workouts. Certain teams will call and say, hey, listen, can you, if we come there to the University of Buffalo and work out for you in April, can you do it? So he'll have a few of those.
And why would those teams need that based on combine and what they got here today?
I don't know. It seems like it's become the latest overkill of our business of, doing individual workouts. You know, a lot of times, you know, because of the workout schedules, people can't get here today. Auburn was going today. You know, there's other combines on other days. So it's just maybe they couldn't get here.
So there are, say, even though you had every team here, there are scouts or coaches from the same team that was here today that they want to get a look at Khalil
Mack. They might come back,
And so for Khalil Mack, he can't really take the foot off the gas pedal as far as conditioning.
There is a certain point, and I don't know the date, when we're not allowed to work him out before the draft. That there's a certain window when they say, okay, it's 2 weeks before draft and no more physical workouts.
You know what? It strikes me, and I've just noticed it more this year, and thinking about some of the Bills rookies from this last year, guys who came in, went through this process, played a lot last year. This is an off season for them. I mean, when you think, and you know this, what they've done in college, the season ends late November, early December. Then they step it up for, you know, if they're in an all-star game, combine, pro day, maybe some more of these workouts. There's no let up.
This is a huge year for any senior player that starts preparing for the combine, preparing for workouts. Then he gets drafted, the mini camps, and then, you know, 4 preseason games, 16 regular season games. This year is really a brutal year for kids from college.
And then the following year, have you noticed in your career that maybe guys are a little more well-rested, maybe they have better legs second year? Because that's kind of a grind from you're talking about from July to the following.
It's a huge grind for us, and we're very aware of it as far as, you know, when we get the players that we draft and we bring them in, we're very aware of, you know, what they've been doing since the end of their college football season, you know, till they start lining up and playing for us. I mean, there's a ton of work that they've done. And a lot of it is just to run a 40 or to vertical jump and do things like that. You know, as soon as the draft's over, that's all thrown away, and it's back to football, just football drills and football playing and the mental part of it.
And as far as that goes, in comparing times, I was talking to one of the scouts out there today about Khalil Mack and his combine performance, and he said The fact that Mac was in the second group at the combine may have contributed to a maybe a little slightly slower time than some people anticipated, standing around all day, second group through.
Yeah.
I mean, we're really splitting hairs
here. Yeah, I mean.
But we're talking about tenths of a second, too.
He could have had a bad breakfast, too, or something like that. I mean, you know, there's a lot of reasons for it. But the combine has done a much better job. They bring the players in longer so that there's not they don't have to worry so much about, you know, having a missed flight and rush, and the medical part has been spread out longer so that they have more time to rest and recover for their actual day of workout.
I talked to Coach Jeff Quinn about Mac a little bit today, and actually we were watching the 40s together, and he said, that's fine, he's running well, but he said, if you really want to see him play, watch him hit somebody at the end of that 40-yard dash.
Like I said earlier, the kids think that this is a big part of it, and this is just a piece of it at the end. It really depends on how they played their senior year and how they played their junior year is really where the evaluation of what we think their value is.
I know, Doug, as a UB alum, you've seen a lot of Khalil Mack over the years. Are you surprised how he shot up into the top five, really, on most people's draft boards?
It's funny. In the fall, when you go to see him, you knew he was a very good player. You knew he was a first-rounder. Now, could I pinpoint that he was a top five? No, but I knew he was a top half of the first round kind of player. But, you know, as this go through this process and you start comparing other top players of the country, and then you start saying, well, I'd rather have this guy than that guy, that's kind of how it fits in as far as when NFL teams start saying, okay, well, here's our 10 best guys or 10, 15 best guys and things like that. And, you know, it changes from team to team, I mean, because of needs or other things. But it's a slow process, and rarely do we make that determination in the fall. We just kind of, you know he's a good player, you know his value is a first-round talent. And depending on what scheme you're doing and how he fits, there might be more value for a certain team than another team.
Tell me, and I don't need the whole book, but your book on Khalil Mack, how does he project as an NFL player?
I think, you know, the interesting thing is he can play as a 3-4 outside backer and a 4-3 backer. But he also is going to bring you an extra skill set that he is a very good pass rusher. So he... and third down or in your nickel packages, he can be in your rush packages along with dropping him. But he's a talented pass rusher. So I think most teams that are going to look at him are going to look that even though he can be an every down linebacker, when it is a third down or a nickel situation, they're going to try to maybe use him on a blitz or use him, maybe even put his hand on the ground and bring him off the edge.
You know, when he walked off the field at the end of his workout, I saw Coach Mike Patton of the Browns walk off with him, and I thought, I was trying to envision what he might look like, and I thought about our guy, Jerry Hughes. Yeah. He could kind of play that role on a full-time basis in Mike Pettine's defense.
He could be a rush player in Coach Pettine's style of defense. He can be a stand-up guy. He is very versatile because of his athleticism and the fact that at UB they used him in a variety of different ways also.
I want to ask you about two other UB guys, the running back Brandon Oliver, Bo Oliver, ran pretty well today. Yep. I think maybe people were impressed with what he did.
He ran well. He worked out well. You know, he's certainly a well-built kid. He's strong as can be. But he did a nice job today, and I think he's helped himself.
Does his lack of height, really, is that an issue? How much of an issue would that be?
It's a running back.
Right. What was his height measured?
Not off the top of my head. He was 5'6" something. Okay. So he's not the tallest.
No. He's not. And one more guy who wasn't able to complete his workout, Alex Newts, the wide receiver from Grand Island.
Alex, unfortunately, pulled up a little bit after one of his 40s, so, you know, he wasn't able to complete some of the positional drills, but he did get through all the other numbers things, so, you know, most teams will be able to at least, you know, compare him to other receivers as far as how they have them rated.
Hey, Doug, we know from talking to Doug Whaley in the last couple of weeks or so, and again at the Combine, after your scouts meetings, I want to say 3 weeks ago now, your initial board is up. Yeah. How does it change from now on, and what would make a guy move up or down on your board?
Well, I mean, you know, rarely is it because of the workouts and things. I mean, there's occasionally the guys that you hoped would run better that just, you know, it's going to affect their draft stats, but that's really the minority. Majority of your guys, you're just trying to get a better feel for, and, you know, we fine-tune our Bills board. I fine-tune the players that I've looked at, you know, and it's just like, okay, I'd rather, you know, I think this guy would bring more to our club than this guy, and it's just fine-tuning value. It really doesn't change a whole lot of us. I mean, I've always said that, you know, we do all the work in the fall and you come up with a grade or a value on a guy. And then everything from then till the pro day, makes you doubt it, you know,
yeah.
from Senior Bowl.
You're
to yeah, yeah, you're like, yeah. oh, you wouldn't. But by the end of the day, when you go back and watch tape, it's usually the exact same guy that you thought he was on film.
Thanks for doing this. We appreciate it.
Oh, anytime, Murph.
Doug Majewski, the Bills National Scout, coordinator of college scouting. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Doug Majewski, the Bills Director of College Scouting, National Scout. He was the man in charge today of the Pro Day for the UB Bulls. We're going to hear more about that as the show moves along. About a half hour from now, we're going to hear from Khalil Mack, some of his post-workout comments today. He ran well, a clock time of 4.55 to 4.58. in the 40-yard dash, did everything they asked him to do and did it well. We'll also hear from Jeff Quinn. We had a chance to talk with him for a little bit, the UB coach, about his pro prospects, plural. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about a new book called The NFL Year One, about the 1970 season and the dawn of modern football. We'll talk with author Brad Schultz when we return. One more hour to go, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like that kind of party, baby.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop CJ Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
Let's go sometime.
Hey, yeah. Hold hands. Let's go. Check it out.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands. This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, here until 9 o'clock tonight. We got a two-hour show coming up tomorrow as well, and a pretty good one. We'll talk more about that as this hour goes along. We talked about Jarris Bird. We'll revisit that and get more phone calls on the air later this hour, I promise. And we're going to hear from some of the principals at the University of Buffalo's Pro Day, which was held here in One Bills Drive today. But first, to look back, a little bit back, into NFL history. Many of us think the NFL was born in a Hupmobile dealership in Canton, Ohio. But there's a book out that says the dawn of modern football was the 1970 season, 44 years ago. The book is The NFL Year One. It is published by Potomac Books, and the author, Brad Schultz, is on the line with us right now. Brad, good evening. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Terrific. Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You are a professor at University of Mississippi, and you live in Oxford, Mississippi. Is that right, Brad?
That is correct.
One of my favorite places. I haven't been there in 15 years, and I dragged my young kids there 15 years ago on our way from, I think we're going Atlanta to Memphis, just to show them where William Faulkner's house is, Roanoke. It's still there, right?
It's still there, but you wouldn't recognize the rest of the town. We are experiencing a huge growth spurt, so it's changed a lot.
I'm almost sorry to hear that. I like that little, there's like a big old white courthouse in the village square.
Oh, we still have all that, believe
yeah.
me.
I love Oxford, Mississippi. Well, thanks for joining us. I enjoyed the book. The merger, this is what struck me as I'm reading it, and you'd chronicle this in the book. The merger was announced in June of 1966, and I was alive back then, Brad, but why did it take so long to get the two leagues together? What took 4 years?
Well, I think it was just kind of a general phasing in more than anything else. They didn't want to start, for a lot of reasons, didn't want to start playing right away. There was still a lot of resistance at that time, especially on the part of the AFL owners, to do this and to get together. And you know, you mentioned that time period, and Al Davis, the late Al Davis, was one of the ones. He was the commissioner of the AFL at the time, and he was very much against the merger. So it was kind of done against his wishes, and it was kind of his intransigence and some of the other AFL owners as well that probably kind of delayed things a little bit, I think.
You know, Brad, I was a 13, 14-year-old Buffalo Bills fan back then, and I was fiercely loyal to the American Football League, but I do recall really looking forward to the merger in 1970 when we'd finally be able to see what these AFL teams looked like up against the NFL teams. Do you think that was fairly common back then?
Oh, that's what is so interesting about it, when you realize that these teams were playing for the first time. And so you had some kind of natural rivalries like the Bengals and Browns, and you know, some of those, the Jets and Giants and that kind of thing. And there was kind of a newness about it and kind of a sense, very real sense of going into the unknown. And, you know, I may be kind of old-fashioned, but I would love to see the NFL go back to the day where, you know, the teams in this conference didn't play the teams in this conference until the Super Bowl. I think maybe that would generate some more interest.
Yeah, like baseball used to be up until interleague play.
Exactly.
Yeah. Our guest is Brad Schultz. His book is The NFL Year One, the 1970 season and the dawn of modern football. Realignment was a big issue, and I do recall that argument. They had to basically convince, maybe even bribe, three NFL teams to go play in the AFC, right?
Well, that is correct. Nobody from the NFL really wanted to go over. And they held these series of meetings, and they couldn't decide and couldn't decide and couldn't decide. And the famous quote from Art Modell was, you know, I've been here so long, my suit went out of style. And essentially what they ended up doing is after they ended up paying the Browns, the Colts, and the Steelers to switch over, to actually get the realignment thing figured out, they just pulled names out of a hat. That's how they ended up doing it. And there were some people that didn't like it, but that seemed to be the fairest way to get it done.
And they paid them a grand total of, what, $3
million? $3 million apiece, which is, of course, today.
Nothing.
Chicken feed.
No, really, nothing back then for the Colts, the Steelers, and the Browns. You know, a part of your book that I liked, and you kind of set the scene for the entire 1970 season, but you did make mention of a guy who is really a prominent name in Buffalo Bills history, and that's Bob Kelsu. And I guess I didn't put it together, but that's... The summer he died was right before the merger, before the team started
playing.
Yeah,
that was part of that whole season. I believe it was July when he was over in Vietnam and became the only active NFL player to be killed in Vietnam. And his story has been profiled in any number of places, but it certainly is both a tragic but still an interesting and compelling story.
Brad, you mentioned the rivalries, and they were pretty fierce, weren't they? The Browns and the Bengals, the Jets and the Giants, even the Super Bowl combatants from the January before got to play a regular season game that year, right?
I believe so. And, you know, I think we've lost some of that. I really do. I'm not sure we have those real intense rivalries anymore, even like when the Bengals and Browns play, or the Steelers and Browns even. I think that's something that's kind of missing, and maybe that's what makes that period so interesting or so nostalgic or what have you, but I just think that that's something that we, you know, has been kind of lost over time.
It's 1970 season, notable for the merger and the fact that the two leagues played together, but in the history of pro football, the birth of Monday Night Football may rank as the most notable thing about the 70 season. Would you agree?
I absolutely would agree with that, and it's so hard to believe, especially in this day and age where TV shows come and go in a matter of weeks, that, you know, what started in September of 1970, albeit on a different network, is still on the air today, and it was just so revolutionary in so many ways, and it's not so much that it changed a lot of things, it just kind of was indicative of the huge demand that there was for football. When it started, there were a lot of people that did not think it was going to work, because the whole idea of putting football on a Monday night on a regular basis, and that was just that, the success of it was just that first sign that, hey, if it works on Monday, maybe it would work, and now we've got Thursdays, and we've got college football on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays. So it was not so much that they were doing anything hugely different. It was just that they were really giving the audience what it wanted.
At its inception, Brad, in 1970, the creator of Monday Night Football, Rune Arledge, was convinced that he needed star power in the broadcast booth, and that's how we were blessed with Howard Cosell for so many years, correct?
Yeah, and that was really kind of the thing that made the whole thing work, him and Meredith. And, you know, not many people remember that Keith Jackson was the first play-by-play person, and then he bowed out after a year and Fred Gifford came on. Everybody remembers Cosell and Meredith and how successful they made it. And they really were, I think, kind of the first successful duo in the sense of creating something like a Madden and Summerall did. The chemistry between them was so good, it showed everybody that if you had the right people in the booth, it could really make the show work, whether or not the game was any good.
Well, it leads me to think about this, though, Brad, because now we have, obviously, Sunday Night Football with, you know, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, Monday night on ESPN. The CBS is going to have Thursday Night Football for half a season coming up. And do you think the league still needs stars in the broadcast booth for primetime football games? Because
I really do, because I think you just mentioned it. There is so much of it now.
Yeah.
You have got to the announcers are what make it worth listening to. And I tell you, when Summerall and Madden were doing it, or even, you know, I go back to Summerall and Brookshire. Those are the two I always liked.
Yeah.
You can listen and tune into the game. That's what makes it stand out. That's what makes it different. There are 16 NFL games on now every week with 16 different sets of announcers. And there's so much of it, there's so much clutter, you just get the sense that it's all kind of the same. So I think the announcers have become even more important, if anything else.
Hmm. That first Monday night game ever, the Browns at home in the old Cleveland Stadium against the Jets, turned into a pretty good game, didn't it?
And it also had the advantage of having Namath, who was at the time, and I suppose still is, a huge television draw, and someone who's kind of a magnet for attention. And yeah, it really was. That kind of set the table for the rest. Now, they had some dog games that year. They had some games that weren't very good, but that really did get the franchise off to a good start.
The 1970 season is the topic of the book. It's called The NFL Year One. The author, Brad Schultz, is live on the line with us tonight. Among other moments in the 1970 season, Brad, was Tom Dempsey's record field goal, a record that stood for a long, long time. Talk about that game, if you would.
Well, of course, the Saints back then were awful, and they'd been awful for years, and they still had a very dedicated fan base. So when they played the Lions, who were really good and ended up making the playoffs, they played at Tulane Stadium, old Tulane Stadium, and they filled it up like they usually did. And, of course, the fans were really coming to see the Saints win because they never won. They were just coming out to see the game. And the Saints hung in there, and Detroit kicked a late field goal, 11 seconds to play, and the Saints got the ball back, of course, with the time for just one kick, and they set up. Now, back then, the goalposts were on the end line. If it had happened today, there's no way they could have done it, but because the goalposts were on the end line, the Saints were on their own 45, so that made it the 63-yard distance, and had a slight wind to his back, and Tom Dempsey somehow nailed the kick, and the Saints ended up winning on the last play of the game, and pandemonium broke out. Certainly kind of one of the greater moments in NFL history. And to be honest with you, I was a little disappointed when Dempsey's record was broken this past season. I always thought it was kind of neat that even as good as the field goal kickers have become and as successful as they are, that he still shared that record. And I was kind of disappointed to see that go by the wayside this past year.
Yeah. Hey, Brad, around these parts, we kind of view things through the prism of the Buffalo Bills. That year was not a good year for the Bills, 3-10-1. But among other things, they did have the NFL's Offensive Rookie of the Year in quarterback Dennis Shaw. And as it turns out, that was really the highlight of Dennis Shaw's NFL career, his rookie year. There wasn't a whole lot going on around the Buffalo Bills that time, was there?
No, it was a transitional period, of course, from the championship teams of 64 and 65. They've kind of turned over the roster. They were going through several different coaches. Lou Saban was not going to come back until I believe it was 72. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a difficult period in there. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I'm working on another book. This book kind of got me thinking. So I'm doing a thing, another book on interesting sports people and personalities and things that happened in 1970. And, of course, that was the Sabres' first year.
Yeah.
So I talk a little bit about that. And James Harris, he was an interesting guy on that team, on the Bills that year, because technically the only black quarterback in the league at that time and was the starter up until that season, until Dennis Shaw came in. So that's an interesting story as well, too. But, yeah, absolutely a very, very difficult time for the Bills that year.
I just saw James Harris a couple weeks ago at the Combine in Indianapolis. They call him Shaq. James Harris, yeah. Hey, of all this going on in the 1970 season, Brad, it turns out the Super Bowl was not that great. It wasn't a great matchup, the Colts and the Cowboys, was it?
Well, this goes back to what we just said. These were old NFL teams that played each other all the time. And they had played each other in the regular season just the year before in 1969. So there was none of that kind of freshness to the game, the AFL versus NFL. Add that to the fact that they were two very defensive-minded teams that didn't throw the ball a whole lot, and it was just a brutal game. Yeah. It was 11 combined turnovers. It was just a really awful football game to watch. And the only thing that makes it stand out, of course, is the last-minute kick from Jim O'Brien. But it when you start talking about the worst Super Bowl games of all time, everybody was talking about Denver and Seattle, you know,
yep,
a few weeks ago. I think this has to be, if not the top one, certainly in the top five.
Hey, Brad, we talked a minute ago about the historic implications of the 1970 season and Monday Night Football. You also, towards the end of the book, talk about how the 70 season, the merger of the league, sort of set the stage for what you call Roselle's utopia, Pete Roselle's utopia. Can you expand on that, what you were thinking there?
Well, the whole point of what Pete Roselle was trying to do, the former commissioner, was create a situation where there was both competitive and economic parity in the league. They didn't want one team to dominate, either financially or on the field. Now, in terms of the economics, it was his idea to share all the television revenues. And they still do that today. All those billions of dollars they make go into one pot, and all the teams draw from it equally. If they did it based on market size, you know, New York and Chicago would win every year. That's one of the things that helps the league maintain a competitive balance. The other thing was Roselle really, really emphasized this idea of competition on the field and where everybody was going to be in it every year for the Super Bowl. Really didn't want those dominant teams to win every year. And, you know, so the situation that kind of grew out of that, one sports writer referred to it, well, Roselle's utopia would be if every team finished at 7-7 and every team made the playoff. And,
yeah,
and that's probably an overstatement, but that's kind of what the NFL wants. They want that idea that they want to foster that idea that everybody's got a chance and that everybody can make the playoffs. And if one team dominates, it gets kind of boring. Yeah. And that was Roselle's vision.
Hey, Brad, your book, The NFL Year One, the 1970 season, you said you're working on another book about the year 1970. What's your fixation on 1970?
It's hard. Isn't it strange?
Yes,
I mean,
it is.
You know, you mentioned, you know, when the Bills were champions, you were what, 12, 13 years old?
Yeah. Well, 7 or 8. In 1970, I was 12, 13 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, see, I was 9 years old, and that was really the first time I became what I would call aware in a sports sense.
Uh-huh.
So it was really my first sports season to be a serious fan. And other than that, it's just very, very difficult to explain. I did live in downstate New York for a while.
Okay.
At that age. And that's to this day why I'm a Mets fan. Because I grew up with the 1 year we lived in New York, the Mets won the World Series. And I wouldn't have picked them. If I was going to pick a team, I could certainly pick a much better team, I think, than that. They would have rewarded me a lot more over the years. But it is what it is. And, you know, when you're a kid, you know, living in New York in 1969, that was just a huge deal. So there's just something about being a kid and the connection that you make to sports teams and sports organizations and the individual athletes as well. And for some reason, that time period has just always stood out in my mind.
That's a good explanation, Brad, and it's a good book. We thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight to talk about it.
Oh, no problem at all, and I appreciate your comments about the book, and I'd be happy to come back anytime.
Okay, thank you. Brad Schultz, his book is The NFL Year One, the 1970 Season, and the Dawn of Modern Football. Brad Schultz is the author, published by Potomac Books. If you were around back then in 1970, it's definitely worth taking a look at.
the NFL Year One by Brad Schultz. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We've talked earlier about Jairus Byrd, and we can resume that discussion. If you've got thoughts on that, the phone lines are open. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Jairus Byrd, as you know, not tagged by the Buffalo Bills, not used the franchise tag on Jairus Byrd. So if you have thoughts on that, if you think it's a good idea, not such a good idea, what the Bills did not do with the franchise tag, the phone line's open for the next couple of minutes or so, and we can resume that discussion. Jairus Byrd appeared on ESPN today on SportsCenter with Hannah Storm and talked about the Bills' decision. He said it's going to be fun and exciting to hit the free agent market. Hannah Storm said, you know, you've been mentioned in connection with a couple of teams. What would be your thoughts on playing for Mike Patton in Cleveland? And here's what Jairus Byrd had to say.
It'd be great. I mean, we'll see what happens with this whole process. But, I mean, he was a great coach with the Bills, just with the defense that he put together with us, and did a great job. So I know he'll do big things in Cleveland as well.
You've also been mentioned, perhaps, with the Eagles. What are your impressions of that franchise?
Oh, I'm familiar with Coach Kelly, and I know they're headed in the right direction. You know, they made the playoffs last year. So, like I said, it's a lot that still has to go on. But, you know, obviously those are two, you know, great coaches, and they look forward to doing big things this year. So,
what are your sense of defensive backs and their elevated position in the league such as it is now?
I think they're, you know, the importance of having really good defensive backs is growing. Just like we mentioned, just the pass-happy league that's going on right now and the way teams are throwing the ball and focusing on that, I think you need some good DBs out there.
Jairus Byrd appearing this morning on ESPN SportsCenter with Hannah Storm asking the questions. Byrd said, you know, he is willing. He dispelled any perception that he does not want to return to Buffalo. He said, quote, "That's the furthest thing from the truth." He said, "I was drafted there. They gave me the opportunity. I'm thankful for Ross Brandon and owner Ralph Wilson and those guys for giving me an opportunity. I'm thankful for that. We'll see. I mean, he can begin negotiating with teams on Saturday. He can put together a new deal for himself next Tuesday. And as we said earlier on, it sounds like he's pretty excited about testing the market out there. And from my perspective, do I wish the Bills had had a chance to keep him? Yeah. Do I think they will? Not likely. I mean, as I said, if I'm handicapping it, I'd put it at less than 20% that he comes back. But he gets a chance to look around, see what his value is, which is apparently has been very important to him to test his value. Maybe he'll come back. I think he recognizes that it was not such a bad situation here in Buffalo. Probably would have liked to have more stability in the coaching staff. Undoubtedly would have liked to have more wins in his 5 years with the Bills. And we'll see. We'll see if he gets a better offer. Scott tweets in, "Us season ticket holders want him back and we need him back." I can understand that. Yep. And I understand the frustration. I mean, you want to keep your good players. It's part of it is the way the league is set up for free agency, and part of it as well, I believe, is Jairus Byrd's desire to test his market value. And, you know, would he have if they tagged him, we'd probably be right down the same road that we were a year ago, where he would probably likely hold out for as long as he could, number one, and number two, where they would have invested $15 million over 2 years in a guy essentially renting him for 2 years. Here is Jacob from Sacramento, California. Hi, Jacob. You're on the air.
Hey, John. How's it going, man?
Okay.
Hey, I just had a quick comment. I just saw something on Twitter, so it kind of made me think about the Jairus Byrd situation. I was thinking that, you know, with the money that he was, you know, demanding, or, you know, the market value that he's looking for, I was thinking, you know, there are some other players that we could get and just get multiple players for the cost of one. The Twitter post I just saw was I saw that Brandon Browner was just reinstated to the NFL. I was just thinking about, you know, if the Bills would think about taking a shot with him, putting him across from Gilmore, I think that'd be a pretty good tandem there.
Yeah. Yeah, you might be right. I mean, that's the other thing to think about, and I do think, and as we said earlier in the first hour, you know, they're going to have to spend up to 95% of the cap, and so I do anticipate some moves here in free agency and maybe restructured contracts for current Buffalo Bills. I fully expect that sometime in the near future, they're going to want to look at some veteran linebackers in here, some run-stuffing middle linebackers, because I do believe that they're looking to move Kiko to the outside. And so, yeah, that money will be spent on that. It'll be spent on guys currently under contract that they value. They don't want them out on the street. We'll see. Let's go to Mitch in Buffalo. Hi, Mitch. Welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I just want to say that I'm extremely disappointed that the Bills wouldn't attempt to franchise him at least for another year to keep him on the team and show that we're going in the right direction moving forward.
I think it's a no-brainer that Bird's going to leave, and I'm going to miss him. It was great having him.
Well, if they franchise him at least for another year, it is only one more year they could do that on. Only one more year they'd be allowed to do that. Show they're going in the right direction? Yeah, I mean, I get it. I get the disappointment. I think they've made a tough, calculated decision that they did not want to tag him for another year, that they did not want to tie up that amount of money, $8.4 million for a safety for 1 year, essentially renting the player. You know, they made him an offer. They want to keep him. And if you believe some reports, they made him a very good offer. A significant offer is what Doug Whaley talked about yesterday. We don't know that nobody really knows the details, but obviously there have been some reports out there. So they do want to keep him. They made him an offer in an attempt to keep him. That's still, as far as we know, out there to be discussed if he doesn't like what he's seeing around the league. And it's kind of the way the league works. You want to rent him for one more year at $8.4 million? They could probably handle paying him $8.4 million this year if they had him lined up for a couple of years after that, so they could spread out the cap hit, so they could, you know, have some certainty about that position. I think that plays into it as well. It is disappointing, I'll give you that. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to start to focus in on what went on in the Healthy Zone Fieldhouse today, the University at Buffalo Pro Day with Khalil Mack and company in front of 32 scouts. We'll hear from head coach Jeff Quinn coming up next. We'll hear from Khalil Mack. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Here until 9 o'clock tonight. I'm excited about tomorrow night's show. Pete Prisco from CBSSports.com will join us tomorrow night to talk about free agency. Matt Miller, who covers the NFL draft, will be with us tomorrow night. And how about this? Harry Carson, former New York Giants star, going to be on the show with us tomorrow as well. He is right in the middle. He is the executive director of the Fritz Pollard Alliance. You've probably read and heard about the controversy about a league proposal, a possible NFL rules change about the use of offensive language on the field, in particular the N-word. Harry Carson has some very strong feelings about that. He'll be with us tomorrow night to talk about that. Tonight, we still got some ground to cover, including University at Buffalo, right across the way in the Buffalo Bills Healthy Zone Fieldhouse. The UB Bulls held their pro day, and all eyes were on Khalil Mack, the All-American linebacker for the UB Bulls, regarded as one of the top prospects, maybe the top overall pick in the NFL draft on May 8th. He ran well today. Apparently not happy with his 4.65 official time in the 40-yard dash at the combine a couple of weeks ago. Today, and there are different reports out there, some say he ran 4.53 in the 40-yard dash. Best we can come close to accuracy, it's 4.55 to 4.58. At any rate, he shaved a significant time off his 40-yard dash time at the combine a couple of weeks ago. Khalil Mack, who attracted a lot of attention, a lot of media there today, a lot of UB staffers, a lot of Buffalo Bills staffers and scouts and personnel from 32 NFL teams. Khalil Mack met the media after his workout today and said as far as that big crowd, he didn't really pay much attention.
I didn't notice the crowd. I mean, 32 teams. That's a blessing. But it's all about my teammates right now. Brandon Oliver did a great job today, as well as Noose before he got a little pull somewhere. But everybody did a solid job, man. We just wanted to come out here and get some good working.
How'd you feel?
Felt good. Felt good, man. Felt good being out here, especially at a field I practiced at a couple times throughout my career here. So it felt like home. And it was great to get that transition from the combine in Indianapolis to come here in the eight-degree weather and getting some good work in.
Feel more comfortable here?
I mean, yeah, this is my second home as far as a practice field goes. I mean, coming from Buffalo campus, coming out here, I mean, we did that a lot throughout my career, so it's kind of like a home turf deal.
For a guy that was so recruited coming out of high school, what is this attention meant to you? It must be somewhat astounding where you've come from
in 4 or 5 years. No doubt. It's a blessing. It just goes to show a lot of people that hard work does pay off. I mean, throughout my career here, I didn't think this could possibly happen, but it did, and it's a blessing.
You didn't think? You never, through your career, you didn't think?
Well, just seeing the previous deals and throughout the history here, I mean, it's a blessing.
Were you surprised by the amount of attention that you got?
I don't try to notice that. You know what I mean? I try to keep that to the back burner. I'm still working hard, and that's what it's about with me. I don't focus on the attention, so to speak, but I'm out here working hard, and that's what it's all about for me. I want to continue to get better.
Khalil Mack, who answered all the questions from the media, answered really all the questions from the scouts running that 4.55 in the 40-yard dash today. What's left if you're trying to poke holes in Khalil Mack's resume? What's left? I mean, I talked to a few scouts. I was out there watching the workout today. The only thing could possibly be the level of competition. I know they played against Ohio State, played against Baylor at the start of the year, but most of his activity came, obviously, in the Mid-American Conference instead of, say, the SEC or the Big Ten or out west, the Pac-12. So Khalil Mack was asked this question. Does he get questions from NFL people about playing at that level in the Mid-American Conference?
Oh, no doubt. Everybody wants to know, especially from a scout standpoint, how did I get to Buffalo? But it's nothing but a blessing, man. I'm glad I got the chance to play here throughout my college career. It's been nothing but a blessing seeing guys like James Starks and Naaman Roosevelt and Devontae Shannons and all these guys that instilled that greatness in this program rub it off on me. And I'm able to speak to all you guys today.
Well, I mean, you've used a lot of motivation in your past about the incidents with the chip on your shoulder.
No doubt.
Heavily recruited,
mm-hmm.
the 46.
Uh-huh.
So now that you're being celebrated and everyone's thinking that you're going to be a top 5 or top 10 draft pick, do you wonder about what type of motivation you're going to use at the next level once you've now accomplished yourself?
Not at all. I set goals for myself. I want to continue to work hard and get better. I don't feel like this is my final goal, in a sense. I feel like it's a lot more that I have to prove, you know what I mean, especially coming out of the MAC conference. I feel like I got to go out there and dominate on the next level, and I'm working hard to do that.
Well, it seems like the certainty that you're going to be drafted, you know, high in the first round, maybe top 10, top 5, whatever. How much can that mean for the UB program, and how much do you think it can help it going forward?
I mean, the UB program speaks for itself, especially with Coach Jeff Quinn and Coach Tepper and all the great staff that they have here, Alex Wood. It speaks monumentally to how they develop the players here, especially with the strength program they have with Coach Zach Duvall, who's now at Wyoming. But it's just a whole lot of things that UB has set up for their players to do great things, especially on the next level.
Khalil Mack meeting the media today after his workout, a very good workout, opened a lot of eyes with his great time in the 40, and what a great day it was for the UB football program. We had a chance after the pro day ended to talk a little bit with head coach Jeff Quinn to get his thoughts about Khalil Mack's workout and all the other workouts for the UB players who were there, including Alex Newts, the wide receiver, and Bo Oliver, the running back. So here's our conversation with UB head coach Jeff Quinn.
UB pro day in the Bills Fieldhouse, John Murphy with Bulls head coach Jeff Quinn. What a great day for the UB program, really, it was today, wasn't it, Coach?
Yeah, it's been awesome. It represents how far our program has come over the last 4 years. And, you know, I look back at the way these young men, as freshmen, all bonded together. You know, they took a stand and said, hey, we're going to get to where we always wanted to be. And that was to get to 8 wins and get to a bowl game and be able to have this kind of display with all 32 football teams representing the NFL and some CFL teams. Yeah. Says a lot about our program and how far these young men have taken this team and this program at this point.
And you mentioned it, 8 wins, bowl game, that means a lot. That actually is most important. But to get that kind of a turnout, to have this kind of a pro day, that's got to help in every respect for your program, especially when it comes to recruiting.
Well, it certainly does. It adds credibility to what we're doing. So we're always looking for bringing in the right kind of players, the right kind of Bulls. And then I obviously have a plan to develop them intellectually, socially, spiritually, physically, and skill. And when a young man looks at the way these guys have developed over the course of 4 years, they can identify with their opportunities being here. And with our system, I don't think it'll fail if you really buy in. And that's what these kids have done, and that's what it represents.
Much of the attention focused on Khalil Mack. You know, people talking about him early in the first round. Tell us about him. Maybe something that we haven't heard about Khalil. Maybe something if an NFL scout or coach called you, what would you want to tell them first and foremost about Khalil Mack?
Well, I always tell them he's a complete player. You know, not only on the field but off the field, he's a complete person. You know, he takes his work very serious. He's probably one of the hardest workers that I've ever coached. But he's very intellectual about the game in terms of understanding the schemes and the system and where his role and responsibility is. And he's extremely competitive. Let's face it, this guy holds 2 NCAA records for forced fumbles and tackles for a loss. So he knows how to get out on their side of the line of scrimmage, and he knows how to take the ball away. But he's a complete player.
You know, he was talking to the media earlier. earlier today about he was not happy with his 40 time at the combine. And what did he do? He told us he went out and worked at the Pepsi Center to get better, and he certainly did get better today.
Well, that just shows his competitive spirit. You know, he knows that he can do better, and anytime you have that in a player, you know that you're going to get his very best all the time, and that's what Khalil delivered today, his very best, and he even improved his 40 time, and that says a lot about his work ethic and his mindset that he wants to show and display the kind of high level of speed that he has to play at the next level.
I was standing with you on the side when he ran the 40. And you mentioned to me, all right, 40 times are one thing. You want to, there's another story to his speed and his functional speed, I think.
I said, exactly. I said, you know, this guy's running 40 yards, but you guys all have to remember that he's going to hit somebody, and that freight train's going to take somebody out. But that's what you love about Khalil. You know, 2 years ago, I watched him against Pittsburgh running down a guy who had probably a 40-yard head start on him. He tracked down that kid. And that just tells you how competitive he is, how passionate he is, and how important it is to him. Him, not just for himself, but for this team and what we're trying to accomplish. So that 40-yard dash, when he's at the end of that 40, just remember he's going to have a helmet, shoulder pads, and someone's going to get hit with that kind of speed.
And the thing that he brings, among all the football skills, on a day like today, he brings attention and a spotlight on some of his teammates, which has to help.
Well, it certainly does, and I think our kids all understand that as teammates. Is, you know, when you have somebody of that high caliber and that well thought of, you know, he's doing it for himself, but he's doing it more for others, you know. And I think that just shows and demonstrates the kind of leadership he is, the kind of person he is. And, you know, he loves Bo Oliver and he loves Alex Nutz. He was one of the five captains that was, you know, on our football team. And he's always embraced that role. But he's living the example of what we expect here at UB.
What kind of a pro prospect is Bo Oliver, and especially what you saw today?
Well, you can see he's probably one of the hardest working guys out here. Every drill that you saw him, he finished way beyond where anybody ended. So he's 15, 20 yards on finishing. Caught the ball well. You know, he knows how to instinctively understand the run game protections and route running. And that's what he's all about, too. And I think that's whoever gets Bo Oliver is going to get a hardworking kid who's going to be productive and very durable. And he's a tough runner. He's tough to tackle. And that's where he's going to get his yards.
And the last thing, Coach, we didn't get a complete day out of Alec Nutz. He came up with a muscle pull, but he's been in some, you know, all-star games at the end of the year. Certainly he'll get a look when on draft day and maybe in free agent time, huh?
Absolutely. You know, I think his body of work demonstrates, you know, what the scouts need to see. And I think being in that all-star game, as you mentioned, John, is very important for these kids. And so they know he can run, he can jump, he can catch. You know, he's an all-down type of receiver. Yeah, it's unfortunate today because you want to have a clean day. You want one that's complete. But, you know, he'll have enough to demonstrate what he's about, and an NFL team will take a shot at him. And hopefully it'll be somewhere in the middle of the late rounds, and he'll have an opportunity to continue developing his skills and be a championship NFL-type player.
You're like a proud papa today, aren't you?
Oh,
I get
yeah.
that sense.
As always, you know, I'm proud because of the way these kids bought in. You know, it shows a lot of progress in our program, as I mentioned, but you do it with the right kind of people, and that's what this group represents to me as a senior class. When I came in 4 years ago as a head coach, they were freshmen. You know, and they needed to come in and understand who I was, what my staff was about, and they followed the plan. And when you follow the plan and you obviously have been blessed with some gifts and opportunities, this is what it's all about. So I have a top pro day like today, and it's going to impact recruiting because we're always thinking about that next generation of new Bulls. So it's exciting for our fans. Plus, they filled that stadium this year as the number one. Not only break the record in attendance this year, we were the number one program in the MAC that had the highest attendance. So our family, friends, and fans in Western New York are in store for a great treat as the next season comes about.
Coach, thanks very much.
Thanks, John.
Jeff Quinn, UB football coach, obviously bursting with pride over the big turnout at the Pro Day and the performance of guys like Khalil Mack and Bo Oliver had a very good day today as well. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll try to squeeze in another phone call or two. We got a little bit more to come. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Just a couple minutes left here. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. So it was a big day here today when UB took over the field house, the Healthy Zone field house. And if you need to see more on that, Paul Chris Brown, Paul, who am I talking about? Chris Brown has a video piece up at BuffaloBills.com, Bills Focus, about Khalil Mack and the UB Pro Day. That's up right now at BuffaloBills.com. If you miss portions of our show, you can go to BuffaloBills.com/John Murphy Show, and you can get filled in there. I want to remind you what's coming up in the next couple of weeks. The Bills and M&T Bank honoring outstanding educators with the 6th annual Touchdown for Teachers contest. There is a grand prize winner to get $2,000 in a grant payable to their school or district. It honors the outstanding teachers in Western New York going into its 6th year. If you need more information, go to BuffaloBills.com/teachers. And the deadlines, Monday, April 7th, is when you got to nominate. And the finalists will be notified on Friday, April 18th. Go to BuffaloBills.com/teachers for more info on that. Good show tomorrow. Looking forward to it. Pete Prisco from CBSSports.com on NFL Free Agency. We'll get caught up with him. Matt Miller with a look at the combine, the draft, and what's gone on so far with the pro days. And the great Harry Carson joins us at 8:30 tomorrow night. That's all coming up tomorrow. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer tonight, Tom Reitz. Our producer, Jay Harris, along with Mike Adamek. And the Bills Director of Broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. Back on the air tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, live radio from 7 to 9. John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.